Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
What's going on? You are listening to The Prototype. That's right, guys. It has been a while since we've had a chance to do one of these shows. As we often do with this show, this one usually undergoes the most reboots and retools of any show we do here on This Week in Geek. And while I'm not back full-time and not joined by my regular co-host, Jamie Johnston, today, we're actually joined by a newcomer to...
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Twig family, you may have heard him on Terrible Warriors of late. He's been in the Stargate Shield of Mars campaign, and he's also in the new Friday the 13th Strive to Survive. I'm talking about Alex Papa Plump, or Gravy Moose.
Yes, indeed.
So, yes, welcome to The Prototype, man.
Awesome.
And we're actually doing something kind of special here. One of my favorite people on YouTube is a guy known as JV2017. I used to follow his content for Fallout 4, and he actually started doing this series where it was called, like, The Road to Andromeda. So I reached out to JV2017, otherwise known as Jackson, and I invited him onto the show. So without any further ado, let's welcome Jackson.
Thanks so much for having me on.
I gotta say, Jackson, it's a real pleasure to get a chance to work with one of my favorite YouTubers, because I've been watching your content for well over a year and change now. And I'm kind of glad we had this chance to collaborate on this.
That's awesome. Yeah, when you reached out to me, that was such an exciting opportunity, and I'm glad everything worked out.
Yes, so I suppose you guys are wondering what are we going to be talking about today on The Prototype. Well, it's been about 2 months, and you may be wondering, 2 months since what? Well, one of our favorite franchises between the three of us is EA and BioWare's Mass Effect series. Obviously, huge fans of the original trilogy, and this past March, we had a chance to experience a whole new chapter in the Mass Effect universe with Mass Effect Andromeda, which came out on March 21st of this past year. And me and Jackson had a chance to actually play the game early, not just through EA Access, but through our good friends over at EA and 47 Communications. We were able to both get review codes for the game early so we could start experiencing the game for ourselves. And me and Jackson both had different approaches to this game. I was rushing through this as best I could, whereas Jackson, you took a more relaxed approach to this.
Yes, I did. My idea was to stream the entire thing because it was going to be central to my content. And so I decided to play the first 10 hours, kind of get a feel where people would be with EA Access, because that was a big thing with the launch of Andromeda. And then I slowly played through the game over the next month.
Yeah, and you actually, on your YouTube channel, you actually streamed everything you did.
Yes, absolutely. I 100% of the game to the best of my ability. There were a few quests that may have worked, may not have worked, but by the end of the streaming, I was 97% completion on that playthrough. So yeah, I did everything.
Now, Alex, what approach did you take to this game?
The approach I took is the approach I take to every BioWare game, which is, if, as long as I'm not working or have the time, it's to beat it, complete as fast as possible. Now, I do it on the easiest setting for the first playthrough so I can experience the story, but I put like nearly 100 hours in the week, I think.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like I had the main game pretty much beat. Well, the first part of the game, I guess, before it really opens up, the first world I spent a significant amount of time on. Like, I think I put probably 16 hours and 2 days in initially.
That's insane, first off.
Yeah.
So now that we've had a chance to kind of step away from the game for the last 2 months, I've picked the game up once since I've had a chance to beat this game, and that's highly unusual for me, because when I beat Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, I immediately went through a second playthrough, deciding, okay, well, I'll go back and see what I missed. But on my first playthrough, which took me just a little over a week and change, I was at about 95%. The only quests I missed were stupid little things like go to Kadara, destroy the Ket monitoring devices. It's just the stupid busy work that I mostly missed. But if it could affect the storyline, I did it.
You know, it's funny. Sorry, is it okay if I jump?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's funny that you say that, because I didn't think about it that way with the original trilogy. When I first played the original Mass Effect, I was ready to jump in, and I think I played that over probably 3 times in a row, because that's how kind of engaged I was by that game. And I think it might be also just the amount of stuff that is in this game that kind of pulls you away from the main story. Like the original Mass Effect, what was it, like maybe 10 to 15 hours if you stretched it?
You could beat the first game. I have it down to a speed run where I can 100% everything. I can do it in 18 hours.
18 hours, okay. So yeah, I think game length has something to do with that.
Yeah, and there was something more engaging about the first one, whereas BioWare has had a chance to flesh out the universe more with Andromeda. I didn't feel as connected to the Ryder twins as I did Shepard and his crew. I mean, even early on, it's not like saying Shepard was this amazing character right out of the gate, but I felt more connected to that universe than I did the Andromeda game. And so what we're pretty much going to discuss on this particular show, to reiterate, what went right with this game? What went wrong with this game? Where does the future hold for us? Because within the last 2 weeks, BioWare Montreal has been downsized a little bit, which isn't unusual after a game completes. Other studios downsize and reprioritize staff. So some of them are working on Battlefront 2 right now, which, please, for the love of God, don't suck. And it's kind of left the future of the Mass Effect franchise up in the air, because it's quote-unquote being put on hold for a while. And I know, Jackson, on your channel, you talked about what's the future of DLC, and Alex, it wasn't until you pointed this conversation out to me at the end of the game that there's a message. Oh, by the way, guys, spoilers, sorry you've had 2 months, that you get a message from the Quarian Ark at the end of the game saying, hey, we're still here, we're not dead.
But don't come look for us.
Don't come look for us. And there's this huge open plot thread just being left open to anybody who cares to investigate it. But now with BioWare downsizing that particular studio, unless that DLC is well underway, I'm kind of skeptical we're ever going to see it until the sequel, if there ever is one.
I think the biggest and most telling thing out of all this is I didn't realize that it wasn't the main studio that made this game. That it wasn't the main team, that they have basically farmed it out to their B and C teams. They hyped it as if this was a big thing. And my question is, what have they been working on?
They had this new IP. I know they had something, some kind of live service game that they announced at maybe 2 E3s ago, and then it just disappeared, and then they said they canceled it. And so I think Edmonton is working on something like that. But yeah, this was Montreal.
Yeah, there was codenamed Dylan, I think it is.
And I think this explains a lot of the game. You've got people that never worked, they worked for the company, but they've never worked on the franchise before.
Yeah, and you'd think you'd want to put your best team on your best known IP right now. I mean, as cool as Dragon Age is, and I have no numbers to back this up, I would argue Mass Effect probably outsells Dragon Age. I mean, that's what I would think anyway. It's more prominent in popular culture. I mean, you show someone what an N7 logo is, chances are they know it's a Mass Effect.
But the question will be, did more people buy Andromeda or Inquisition?
Inquisition.
And I'm willing to bet Inquisition.
I'm guessing Inquisition outsold Andromeda, because Andromeda didn't. It sold okay.
Flat out, it's a better game. Inquisition is a better game overall.
What are your thoughts on that, Jackson?
Well, I think that Inquisition, it was certainly received much better, and it did not have the swirling controversy surrounding it. I'm sure it sold better, and it will sell better. For me, it's been so long since I played Inquisition, it's hard for me to make that comparison.
Whereas you, Alex, you're more of a Dragon Age fanboy than I am, because I'm just getting into the series now.
Yeah, my background in all this is Mass Effect had come out. I thought it was just another Halo game. I didn't even know it was an RPG, and I had not been a Western RPG player probably ever, actually. But when I saw the commercials for Mass Effect 2, that made me buy an Xbox. So I played Mass Effect 2 before playing Mass Effect 1. In fact, I didn't play Mass Effect 1 until they had the trilogy on the PS3 come out. So I've beaten Mass Effect 2 on PC, Xbox, and PS3. And the other two have been, the other two parts of the trilogy were on PS3. And then PS4 Pro for Andromeda. Well, Dragon Age, I just got randomly as a Christmas gift when it first came out, and that game pulled me in hard. I did probably over 3 playthroughs, 300 hours in that game, completing everything.
Wow.
Is this Origins?
Yes.
Yeah, I love Origins.
And then I did the you know, first 3 hours of play for every character type so that I could get the trophy for it. I did 3 playthroughs on the 3 main, like warrior, rogue, magic user, about 100 hours on each character. Then Dragon Age 2 comes out, and they shit the bed. And I'm playing the game, and I go, okay, I'll do this, I'll go do this. What? The game just fast forward to, like, for somebody like Mike who's not there yet, I had suggested not even playing it and just jumping from Origins to 3, or to Inquisition. But he kind of has to play it, and it is a quick playthrough, but I didn't like the second game, and again, that was a game where you could tell they farmed it out to somebody else to do it.
Right.
And then the Inquisition comes out, and
they're bringing their A game.
Pretty much, that you could tell that it was quite well done. I played the game, and what I end up doing usually is I play the game as fast as I can, get as much done as I can, then I'll trade it in towards something else, and then come back to it when there's a complete edition. So that's what I did. So I didn't play the DLC for it until easily a year later. So I only played the DLC, I think, in this past summer. So
okay.
It's a little more fresh in my mind.
So with Andromeda, what do you guys think went right with this game? I like the fact that it wasn't a war story. It wasn't us versus the Reapers, although inevitably it eventually became us versus the Ket, which are not as interesting as the Reapers, mainly because they're not super scary boogeymen. They're just a bunch of guys, really.
What it did right, first and foremost, and I'm generally the turn-based RPG guy, it did combat right, even for
me. Oh, yeah, combat felt fantastic.
For somebody who isn't, you know, I play action games, but I'm not your Halo, I'm not your cover shooter guy.
Yeah.
This I was able to pick up and play and have tons of fun with.
This one, I like how fast it was, because I'm coming from the COD Halo background now. I was thinking tactically in the moment, whereas in the other games you could pause combat and assign powers, which I really miss that about this particular game.
Oh,
actually.
Me too. Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought I was doing something wrong for my first 5 hours of playthrough. Like, I was actually thinking, did I just miss a tutorial? Am I doing this wrong? No, my AI is just, Cora, go do your thing.
Yes, it was really hard to control. The AI wasn't great on its own, but I would say what the game did right, I really like the open world exploration. I think the worlds themselves were just beautiful. Like, I had a real sense of wonder when I was going out and trying to discover whatever there was to discover. I know that's it was totally a departure compared to the original trilogy. And so I think I like it insofar as I think it was a fun game mechanic and it was interesting, but I'm not sure that I liked it for my Mass Effect game.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in the same boat because I love the idea of exploring, to steal a phrase here, strange new worlds and new civilizations.
Right.
It was kind of fun just to be an explorer, to literally be that boots on the ground, let's make first contact, let's see what kind of weird stuff is out there. But it seemed to me, if one thing the first trilogy got right, is it felt like the worlds are more alive, but I felt like the space science here was a little bit better. Because there's one point you're exploring the galaxy in Andromeda, and they talk about a blue giant you come across, which is a specific type of star, which right. burns very hot and is very, very massive. Yet when you look at the Galaxy Codex entries for the first three games, each world was a story. Like there was just a paragraph and a half, and it got you enough into it. Like, for example, we knew about the Leviathan of Dis, and I want to say the second game where they mention it, and yet in Andromeda we get barely three or four lines per planet,
and a lot more was narrated to you. I spent countless hours reading and listening to all that crap, and I'm not the guy that picks up all the lore.
Yeah,
I found lore was handled much better there. The navigating to it in this, the menus were crap in this game.
Oh yeah, it was all aesthetic and no functionality.
Yeah,
you know how long it took me to figure out how to pull up the map properly? like really, why is it that I have to pause to go to the map? Why can't it just
be select or something?
Final Fantasy did this 20 years ago, bringing up an overlay on top. I think Final Fantasy VII had it where you could look at the map while you were walking. So why can't you look at the map while you're walking with having it be like half transparent on top of you?
Yeah,
and especially since you're an explorer.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You think you just pull that on up on your like Omni tool and there it is.
Absolutely.
Also, I found... Okay, we're still talking about what it did good, right?
Yeah, yeah. What the game did right before we shit all over it.
Well, I would say they made good choices for voice actors. But we'll get into...
But there is no Mark Meer or Jennifer Hayes.
Yeah, we'll get into dialogue and script and everything. I would say high concept is really good.
Yep.
World building turns out to be quite good. Anything to do with the space, any of the graphics involving space or level design is good.
Yeah, like, I think my favorite world was probably Kadara, because it was so alive. Like, it feels like a swampy Dagobah type thing.
The particle effects, all the extra, like, I don't know if your guys' experience was any different, but I was playing it on a PS4 Pro, on a 4K TV.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have HDR, but even without that, I found it was the load times were quite good. I didn't have any issues loading anything. But again, that might be different for everybody because I had a solid state drive in my PS4.
Right. Yeah. I found Havarl and Elladin to both be like really awesome because I felt Havarl was a change of pace because you didn't have your Nomad to drive around in. So I appreciated that. And also the nighttime and the fluorescent. Bioluminescent plants were awesome. And then the scale of Elladin with those huge dunes and everything, like I thought that was spectacular.
Actually, speaking of your vehicle travel, while still not perfect, is better than in the previous games.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It handled better than the Mako, not as fluid as the Hammerhead, though I did miss having a gun on my ship.
Well,
that thing I missed.
And once you upgraded everything fully... And you could
nothing
really...
could touch you anyway. Although I will admit, running over guys in this was a little bit more fun, especially once you hit them with a turbo boost, they'd go flying.
Yeah,
many cat had fell under the front hubcaps.
Just don't run into the abyssal.
Yeah, no, because it'll kill you. another thing I think this game did right is I think it set itself up to be its own thing really, really, really well. The fact that we're 600 plus years removed from the Reaper War. The fact that this took place before Mass Effect 3, years beforehand, really gave it a chance to live and breathe on its own. The politics of Commander Shepard aren't really in play here.
It takes place, because we already said spoilers, years before and during.
Yeah.
Because especially at the end there with the Quarian arc,
yeah.
The Quarian arc was meant to leave 2 years later, and the Quarian arc, I guess, would have left
just when the Reapers were attacking.
What was happening? So if they do release DLC for it with that, you're probably going to find codex entries and information of either what happened right as the Reapers attacked or what happened at the end.
Now, one of the things I like the fact, because it's revealed later on in the game that the Andromeda Initiative was basically a last-ditch, a chance to save a civilization, just in case the Reapers were real, because people had an idea. What was the woman's name?
The Benefactor?
Yeah.
Or Jean Garson?
Yeah, Jean Garson and everybody else knew something was wrong. Something was coming. People believed Shepard, and then the Benefactor gathering all the resources and everything to help this thing go forward.
Right.
I kind of felt I liked that idea, but Andromeda had a chance to not be the simple answer to that. Like, did you guys get where I'm kind of coming from with that? Like, it seemed a little too obvious. Because, like, oh, they're just escaping the Reapers, and that's cool and everything. You're tying it all in. But you had a chance to break away from that free and clear. And you could have. But I guess the Reapers are Mass Effect. They are the primary bad guy. It's like orcs to Dungeons and Dragons. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, so I'd argue Shepard is too.
Yeah, exactly. You can't have it. Another thing I think this game did right is I think a lot of the squad mates are really well done. Now, there is no bro like Garrus, because Garrus is life. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was upset. Guy. Well, yeah, but you do get a Krogan.
Yeah, Drac is friggin' awesome.
And my party essentially was... He was in it the entire game. And I did keep my Turian, too.
I did Drac and PB, because the dialogue between those two is hilarious. There's one piece of dialogue... I only ever heard this once. And it went something along the lines of... She's like, are you trying to be a supervillain? And he's like, I am the ultimate badass. And she's like, woo. And there was just something about that I absolutely fell in love with. And PB, I thought she'd be more annoying than what she was.
She was annoying.
But I liked her. I don't know. There's just something, because I played as the female rider in like my playthrough. When me and Jackson got this game together, we decided he'll do Scott Ryder, I'll do Sarah Ryder, because that's how I always play my Mass Effects. I have to be the woman first.
I pity you in this game.
See, I think the woman who did Sarah Ryder did a really good job, but she got gypped in the facial animations department. But
yeah,
we'll talk about animations in a minute. But in terms of squad mates, there was nobody I didn't like, with the exception, and I feel bad for picking on this guy, Liam. I never brought him along for mission outside of the beginning of the game. I just found him so boring.
Yeah, I've talked about this before. I think that human squad mates are inherently at a disadvantage because of how interesting alien squad mates are. And I think Liam could have been more interesting.
Well,
I think he was the least interesting.
The only interesting human was, now we're going back. It's either Mass Effect 2 or 3.
Don't you dare say Kaidan.
No, God, no. No, the assassin dude.
That was a drought.
Oh.
No, not him. The guy with the screwed up eye. Why am I drawing a
blank? Oh, Zaid?
Yeah.
Yeah, Zaid Mesani was quite cool. I wish his story was more fleshed out, but he was cool.
That's the only human character I ever took with me.
I like Kasumi. I took her with like me a lot.
Yeah, I like Kasumi too.
But she was hot, so I'm not going to lie here. I choose my squad mates based upon...
You know, in Andromeda, I liked Jahl. I brought Jahl along with me. He definitely is no Garrus, but... I really like Jahl as a character.
Now,
his romance was handled really well for the female rider.
Oh, really?
Although it's a little, it's how it ends is kind of goofy, because let's just say oral sex in a waterfall is a little bit out of some Harlequin romance novel, but okay.
I wanted the Turian so bad. And then no matter what I know. No matter what I did.
Oh, that exoskeleton. Please go on.
No. No matter what I did, I had multiple save files where I would try to go back and do things. Everything kept getting fucked up because I flirted. I don't even think I flirted on purpose once with PB, and it completely fucked everything up.
Actually, let's all talk about romances for a moment. Now, with my playthrough, I had a one-night stand with PB, yet I was still able to romance Suvi, yeah. She was my lesbian romance for, like, Sarah Ryder. And honestly, the main reason I picked her is I liked the way she was written. As a side character, I liked that clash of faith and science. And that was just really attractive to me. Plus, her voice actress, wow.
Okay.
I'm sorry, she sounded really hot. I have no idea what she looks like in real life. But there was something about that romance I really liked. Although PB might have been my second thing, but everybody goes after the Asari, but she was no Liara, which is unfortunate.
I don't know if you can do it, but I sort of wanted to make it with the Doctor.
I think the Krogan can romance her.
Drac. Yeah, she was into Drac, but the player can't.
Aw.
Yeah.
Because that was Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones, wasn't
also,
it?
Also,
yeah.
Okay, I think we're running out of good things to say. every time you're bringing something up, I'm like, oh yeah, but wasn't this terrible? Oh wait, no,
okay,
we're not supposed to talk about that.
Which romances were handled better, the original trilogy or this one?
Original trilogy.
Who had the best romance out of the original trilogy?
Garrus.
Yeah, Garrus and Femshep, for sure.
I never experienced that.
As a male...
You are missing out. It is honestly beautiful.
See, I always played a Paragon male, and then I would play Renegade female. Now, as a guy, I think I ended up with Miranda, and...
Didn't we all?
Well, because that's the one it leads you towards. Don't even have to really try.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Jack or Jax was really hard to do.
Yeah, because yeah. She just kind of gives you a one-night stand and just kind of leaves you.
This is another case of, I think it's better handled in the Dragon Age series overall.
The romances, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to experience that for myself.
Wait till you find the Iron Bull.
Well, okay, there's something that was a hot-button topic with this game, because BioWare being very pro-LGBT and whatnot... This game had a little bit of controversy surrounding that. How do you think this game handled that? Because there's the one character that you meet, and she immediately because I don't know what proper pronoun to use here, I'm sorry, don't really get, they give you everything you need to know, including what they used to be called. Now that they have a fresh start in the Andromeda Galaxy, they don't necessarily have to do that.
I thought you were talking about the romance things, because I know that they didn't handle same-sex ones.
The guys kind of got shortchanged.
They de-emphasized almost all of it, had almost no animations, almost no... Like, it was there because they wanted to include it, but they sort of had in mind two or three romance options they wanted you to have.
Yeah. Sorry, Jackson, go ahead.
Oh, no worries. Those are, like, two separate issues that were both big... Like, I talked about... the romance and inclusivity options on my channel, and it's very clear that they did not at least pay the same amount of time nor attention on animating those, you know, gay or lesbian scenes. They just didn't, compared to the straight ones. And I don't know if you want to read into that or not, but that's the fact. And then as far as the transgender thing, a lot of people like to point BioWare being inclusive for the sake of being inclusive, but honestly, to me, it just looks like they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah,
as far as her just showing her cards like that.
Yeah, it was kind of an oversight. I don't see it as a slight, but an oversight.
Oh well, yeah, for sure.
Are we done talking about good things?
Well, I want to finish my thought on this. I thought it was good that they even included something like that, because the first time I encountered that character, I was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." And then I had some of my LGBTQ friends say, no, that's not cool. I'm thinking, oh, can you explain to me why? Oh, now I get it. But right. Jackson's right, though. You kind of hit it on the head where they didn't pay as much attention. Because my Suvi romance, we had the cute moment where, like, Sarah admits to Suvi, I really, really, really like you. Your voice is sexy. And I thought that was cute, especially where the pilot's like, kill me now. But right. the culmination of that romance is before the final mission, they share a kiss in the cabin. And it was nowhere near as well done as Jarl's romance or anybody else's, or Vetra's where you climb on top of the mountain on Kadara, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, that was a great scene.
Well, and the fact that they made the male-female interactions much more explicit.
Too. Well, yeah, because with Korra, you're seeing a... I'm not saying well, it's even, porno.
No,
but...
no, and PB, same dealy.
Yeah.
Just blue boobs. Like, yet you would expect if they're going that far with that, why was there no scissoring or something?
Oh, my God.
But still,
that's the class we bring to this show, folks.
No, but really, if you want to call them out as
yeah, because
they went to one extreme with one, and then almost threw it in as an afterthought just to say that they were including inclusive. It.
Yeah, because with me now at the conclusion of the romance, and this happens post game with Suvi, you guys end up getting a puppy together.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought that was actually kind of cool, because they talk about they're going to bring different embryos at a cryo storage, and they talk about, you know, getting a puppy, and I thought that was kind of cute. But I wanted something more than a kiss. I didn't want an explicit sex scene. I wanted something a little bit more emotionally weighty. I wanted something equivalent to Shepard and Garrus for my female leads, with them saying, I care about you, I love you, and then maybe it leads into a lovemaking scene and the camera cuts away. Well, not just a simple kiss. I wanted something more from that.
It could have even been something like, they don't have keys, but handing a key card over to the apartment.
Yeah, like, there could have been something a little bit more from this. I mean, mostly I felt squadmates were done well in this game. Romances were handled okay. But in terms of inclusivity, maybe that could have been done better. Although BioWare has said they're working on options for the male rider on male relationships, so I guess more homosexual relationships.
Yeah, but they said that before they downsized the whole division.
Yeah, actually, I never even thought about that. I wonder how that's going to be affected going forward.
And they didn't announce sales. I have a feeling it sold half of what they were expecting.
Which is...
They weren't expecting that much, even.
Really?
Yeah, they were expecting, I think, 3 million.
That means... That means internally they probably reviewed the game and went, ooh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the original trilogy, I looked this up before Andromeda came out. It sold 10 million across all platforms, which sounded low to me. That's the entire original trilogy. And then coming to this, they're expecting 3 million, I believe. So,
which is interesting because it had a lot more buzz than anything since Mass Effect 2.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Now, let's talk about what this game did bad.
Everything else.
Yeah.
Well, okay,
Where do you start?
Okay,
with
you
this?
Want to start bad? I'll tell you bad. Dialogue.
Combat dialogue was
No, not that. I'm talking the dialogue for the script of the game.
Not all of it was terrible, but a vast majority of left me scratching my head.
It doesn't matter what you select ever in any of your conversations, everything is sarcastic.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with
There's
that.
There's no
actually.
Sarcastic option. It's either I'm also... They'll have four options, and when you click on them, nothing you say corresponds to what those options are. The dialogue doesn't even match up. How about the biggest detractor for this game that is going to piss off the vast majority of fans? Removing the good and evil aspect. It's one thing if you... They tried to incorporate, I guess, like a Witcher type thing where you have more ambiguous answers, but they're not just clear cut good and evil, Paragon and Renegade, but nothing you say or do affects the game. It seems like you have three or four pivotal choices of, you know, whose faction you pick, and then that will determine who's with you at the end game when you're, you know, storming the Meridian. But outside of that, it doesn't appear that any choice you make really affects anything, so why do they even give you the option to make a choice?
Yeah, a lot of the dialogue choices end up sounding kind of the same for everything.
And it doesn't affect anything later on.
I think that writers, both of them, you know, depending on who you picked, I think they were less choice-driven in terms of their dialogue and how they felt, even compared to Shepard. Because, I mean, with that Paragon Renegade system, it was very different, right? And it didn't matter what you picked in this game. Ryder was always going to be this sarcastic. It was kind of like the Fallout 4 problem, if you guys remember that.
Yep.
With a Soul Survivor, he was always going to be this, you know, sarcastic dick or sarcastic nice guy, you know?
It's just, it doesn't make any sense where they ask you what you want to do, you'll answer, and you can save and go back. No matter what you answer, their responses are basically the same. So what is the point of giving you a false sense of choice?
It's like they went backwards, really, because you see other games emulating this and, you know, giving you one or two or three options, but it doesn't really matter. It's kind of just there so you can make a choice. And it seems like they went backwards with that.
It was more inflection than it was anything.
Not to mention the high concept of the game. Like I said, the main ideas they set forth are great. The actual execution doesn't make a lot of sense. The fact that how long was the Nexus Awoken? A couple years?
About a year and change.
How is it they're that ingrained in all the planets already? Like they're so entrenched in the societies, it doesn't make any sense. Not to mention, when you meet up with Jarl's planet, like when you go navigate through the space there and you end up on their planet, and it's like, you say, oh, we're making first contact. You're not making first contact. They're on planets with your people for at least a year already.
Yeah, because there had already been trade between the exiles.
And they pretend that they've never, it's like, no, that they've never met you. Not only that, like you're the first outsiders they've seen. It sounds like the game was written in sections by different people, and they placed it together without doing any continuity checking.
I think one of the main writers for this game said he completed his first draft and then he was let go, if I'm not mistaken, so don't quote me on that.
Like it seemed a lot of the individual aspects of the game are well done, but whatever his job was to put them all together, it doesn't fit. Like they're 99% of the side missions and the plot points and things you receive during the game doing your quests are meaningless.
I thought loyalty quests were well done, but some of the side missions just felt like busy work. Like,
what's
collect
point?
20 minerals. No.
Well,
10 maybe. 20, no.
But you didn't feel like, except for the main few missions where you're getting the readiness level of the planets, or the you know, habitation levels, or whatever, yeah, whatever it was.
Viability,
yeah. Getting it up, it didn't seem like they were needed at all in the first place.
Yeah, some of them, because like here, you're going to spend 20 minutes doing this mission, you get a viability of maybe 2 to 5%.
Well, especially when all you do is if you unlock the vaults and then do, I think it's maybe one main, if you beat the base on the planet,
yeah,
you get 95% complete. So you end up finishing it and you have 30 or 40 more missions on each planet that give you viability points that go to nothing.
Now, they have changed that where it increases your Nexus level, but although the Nexus level is now 29, but if you've already beaten the game, it's retroactive and it doesn't matter.
Well,
basically, you can open all the cryopods now.
And, let's get 100% viability. And what do you get? Nothing. You don't even get...
You get a planet named after you,
which they don't even change the name of the planet in the game. It does nothing. It doesn't give you an extra vault to go in. It doesn't unlock it. There is absolutely no point. Not to mention, you don't even have to. I don't even think you have to go to the final planet.
No.
You don't.
Yeah, it's completely optional.
Yeah, you don't have to go to Elodin.
Which, I went to Elodin, and the only reason I chose to give Morda the bomb is because you told me the Krogan airdrop in at the final scene.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea about that, but I'm like, I could not do this because I've got viability 100% everywhere else. That's another thing, too, about this game. So many things felt so inconsequential.
It's inconsequential and very disjointed.
Or busy work.
They
like, they're like, this is one mission, and this one really pissed me off because of my, like, journalist background. One of the guys you meet at the first of the game asks you to set up all these news transmitters around each planet. It usually involves a lot of stupid jumping up and down to put them at this very high peak. And I thought after you place the five of them around the five planets that you can go to, you'd get a cutscene, or he'd say, hey, now we have this news network. Here's the stories that are really happening out there in the Nexus. What do you get? Oh, here's 20 viability points. Go fuck yourself.
Also, you don't do a final interview with the reporter. She just disappears.
It's very odd. There's no payoff with a lot of this busy...
Or getting all the the plants and stuff for the bartender.
Yeah, I was expecting that a cutscene.
Nothing.
Yeah. Very strange.
Like,
yeah.
It's like the game is 50% done, but they've found a way to release it.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they had to acknowledge, okay, guys, this game is broken within a month, or actually weeks of the game coming out, saying, all right, we got major patches coming.
Yep.
That's not a good sign.
And I encountered a lot of glitches where I was falling to the ground, things weren't popping in right. So many times where I couldn't complete or do a mission because it didn't register that I had completed it.
I had a mission. I was on Eladin, and you know where you have to visit that bad guy city, so to speak. It's in the middle. Yeah. So the giant Hydra, or that stupid mech, got caught inside a rock. I couldn't kill it, so the mission wouldn't complete. I had to reload save after save, and even still, kept getting caught in the rock. I don't know how. Somehow one of my squad mates got stuck in a rock and killed it. That's
okay.
The only reason I was able to beat that part of the game, is because the game glitched.
There's a lot of parts that you'd want to explore or find out the history of, or... They give you lots of lore on things you don't care about.
Yeah, like...
Lots of little details for your codex entries that amount to nothing. That there wasn't enough... I'm not interested enough in what's happening in the game.
Yeah. Now, do you think this game's... not just the script, but the storyline is worthy of Mass Effect? I mean, because more or less this is an exploration mission. Well, I think it's a noble goal to want to colonize essentially another galaxy, because that's a pretty big deal.
To me, it almost feels like it was written by a wannabe BioWare company, like, what's that company, Spiders or something, that did Mars Warlogs and a few other. It feels like a B or C writing team trying to submit something, like, I don't know.
It didn't feel as grand in scope as Mass Effect would, because you'd think for a galaxy colonization effort, I'd feel a little bit more in wonder of what we're trying to accomplish. Like, literally, we're on the frontier of a new galaxy. That should be huge. And the bad guys we're fighting are discount Cardassians.
Also, one alien species outside of the bad guys. You meet one alien species in the entire thing.
What was the name of Jarl's race again?
The Angara.
Yeah, so you had the Angara and the Ket. And
that's it for the... That's not the entire Andromeda Galaxy. The problem is, they promised you the Andromeda Galaxy, and you get the Helios cluster of...
A couple of systems.
It's a convenient excuse.
Yeah. And so, you're telling me that we're in a whole new galaxy where... they could save on assets in the sense that they didn't have half of the races from the how is it that the previous games had 12 to, between 12 and 20 distinct races?
Telling me among all these arcs there is not one Volus just hanging around or one Hanar?
Well, not to mention, but the fact that there's only one alien race they introduced you to, and then the Ket.
Now,
I think a big part of that is them framing Andromeda as the new start of Mass Effect, when it really should have been framed more like a spinoff. Because if you frame it like that, then okay, it makes sense. You've got this more narrow focus where you're going to one cluster in a new galaxy. You're only bringing these races. Okay, but they didn't do that.
Yeah, like I didn't feel like the Milky Way came with me. I felt like the starting lineup of the Milky Way came.
I get the
me.
Feeling that either one or two things have to happen. Either they're going to cancel and they're not going to move forward with any of the explanations of how everything ties together, or they're going to have to get their A team to work on it.
Well, yeah, that's another thing, too. As we mentioned in the beginning of this show, BioWare Montreal has downsized. So are we going to get the answers that we want? And I don't think we're going to.
I don't believe so either.
And that
I don't
sucks.
Have confidence in that. Yeah.
The only way we will, I think, now is we know Shepard didn't die based on
the Renegade ending anyway.
Yeah, so if they can tie in, I guess, the Prime series into this somehow, shoehorn it in, or find a way to get them into the Andromeda Galaxy.
Yeah.
It would work, but it feels like this project was so large that
it was a little too ambitious,
and
maybe?
I don't think it's BioWare.
I don't think it's BioWare either. Certainly not old BioWare.
No, I get the feeling that EA just said, all right, we own, you know, I don't know how many development studios they have. I get the feeling they farmed a lot of these aspects out to weird Eastern European companies and stuff. And you have probably had 10 or 15 teams work on one person. Okay, we're going to write the script in Montreal, but we're going to write it and have 10 rewrites with 10 different people. And there's so much dialogue because this is the biggest game we've ever done.
It was like there wasn't a lot of continuous
we're
gonna oversight.
We'll have Edmonton work on the space and the planet design because it feels like an A-team did that. We're going to have all the other animations done in Europe. We're going to have the characters done somewhere else. We're going to do then we'll have Montreal put everything together.
and you have
a hard release date.
Oh, and we'll take the multiplayer and just reskin it.
Oh, I was mad about that.
See, and that sucks because I used to play a shit ton of the Mass Effect multiplayer.
Nothing about the multiplayer is of benefit to the main game.
Well, no, you do get some weapons, but I've never encountered anything super rare. I've gotten a Black Widow sniper rifle. I've gotten some guns.
You can do that stupid mobile app and get just as...
That's what I do. I just sit in my bed and just play the mobile app, which... It's funny, I actually have, because in the mobile app, they have the difficult missions. You can send people on gold missions. I've had teams that have had a 5% chance of success to succeed gold missions.
Yeah, there's some hidden stuff going on in there.
Yeah, like, it's not programmed properly. And I think the mobile app was a cool idea.
And it crashed my game. I can't tell how many times when I would send them out in the mobile app.
Yeah,
and then I would go to redeem things.
Yeah, and it would freeze your game.
No, and it's the only time this has happened. My entire PS4 froze.
Oh,
it's supposed to be sandbox where it can't do that.
That's really strange.
Yeah,
it is. And I don't know. Now, Jackson, you and I both got the collector's edition of this game, and I wasn't impressed with it. The fact that the only difference that you got was some minor cosmetic items and some guns and some armor.
Yeah, you know, there's the standard, I believe, then the deluxe, which was only $10 more. That was most of the in-game stuff. And then there was the collectors like we got, which the only difference between that and the deluxe was the multiplayer packs. So unless you were really invested in multiplayer and you were going to spend money on 20 packs or 10 packs, however many it was, then it wasn't worth it. But yeah, The deluxe and those items, in-game items, I didn't think they were super substantial.
Yeah, I mean, I wore the Collector's Edition armor, which gave me an XP boost for about 90% of the game just because I wanted to be leveled up quickly. But it never felt as cool as the other armors from the other game. But you're right, though, it didn't feel as substantial. I felt like BioWare had a chance to really do something awesome with this, and instead we got... Well, we'll just take the pre-order stuff from GameStop and include it anyway.
The best DLC, I can't even remember the DLC that came with this, was the Black Hole Gun, the Singularity Gun in Mass Effect 2.
Which
I think that was a pre-order bonus.
You can't get it anywhere.
I got it from Future Shop when I was working there.
I have it on one of my accounts, and I've been able to jury-rig Xbox Live through fooling cloud saves to get it on my primary account. But it was a pain in the ass.
But yeah, like they haven't had... the biggest thing for me was no DLC, no Seasons Pass. That means they have no faith in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Because 100%. they put Seasons Pass on garbage and to try to sell it. So this was them going, we're not going to commit any money unless this sells really well.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll throw it out.
I'm surprised they actually sent you guys review copies.
It took me a while to even get a copy for me and Jackson, and I don't like to reveal my behind-the-scenes stuff with this, but they know I'm a huge fan of the franchise, and I know Jackson's a fairly substantial YouTuber when it comes to producing content for big games like Fallout 4 and whatnot. So I was surprised I was able to get two copies of this so me and Jackson could collaborate on it.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
Like, it took me a lot of, I'm going to do my sing and dance for you, and luckily they sent us a copy. But I don't know, there's just something about this review cycle that feels different.
Well, the other thing I had been hearing from people that were, they were embargoed, but they would still show up on Reddit under, you know, random accounts talking about, they're like, oh, this is a boring game. It's wait. And really, the first third of the game is boring.
Yeah, that's something this game did wrong. When they gave you the EA access, we're going to give you the first planet, the first chunk of the game. First, what was it, Jackson? 10 hours or something?
It was 10 hours, and I thought it was the worst decision because up to that point, there was not much that was compelling. And also, EOS was like, it was like a child's playpen. They cut off certain areas that you couldn't explore that you definitely wanted to, and then you weren't given any indication of, oh, yeah, you can explore that later. We didn't know. We thought maybe that was all of EOS when, in fact, it was not.
What they should have given you, and I understand they didn't want to give you any plot points so that you, when it was over, you couldn't talk about it.
Right.
Probably the most exciting part of the game that would have been fantastic for review would have been putting you on
the planet, maybe?
No, it would have been putting you on the Solarian Arc.
Interesting.
That
choice.
Mission where you're going through.
Yeah, I like that mission.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that would have kept you tight where you wouldn't have, and they could have given you that and then maybe an area of exploration on one of the planets for a tiny little bit. Because if they gave you 10 hours of play on that, like doing that whole mission, the problem is I think the reason they didn't give you guys anything different was because they realized that giving you any of the good parts of the game, that amounts for 15 hours of play for the whole game.
Yeah, actually, here's some... Wow, that truck just blinded me. Now, this is something I found through my experience, and this is how I play Mass Effect games. All right, I'm going to do the story mission, and then I'm going to do everything else around it. Then I'll get to the story mission.
Same.
Right?
Yeah,
same.
Now, when you did the story missions for this game was really short.
Yeah. Very short.
Incredibly. Yeah. And
it's probably 15 hours.
And there's a point, Alex, you can attest to this. Do you remember coming over to my house and I'd be like, I'm so bored.
Yeah.
Mass Effect should never bore you.
I stayed up basically for 36 hours. And I don't recommend doing that. Just grinding through all the boring shit and all the planets. And then before doing Meridian. And then I'm like, oh, this is good. What? It's like 3 hours and I'm at the end of the game?
Yeah, and like, that's it? That's not, okay. One last thing. I have to bitch about this. Did anybody else find the boss fights in this kind of fucking stupid?
I was waiting for you to get to that.
My God.
They're not just boss fights.
A boss fight, sorry. The repeated end of, four the times. End,
yes. And it's not even a boss fight. It's a mini boss because I played that on easy. That's the only part of the game. I upped it to the hardest difficulty I could. And it's still easy.
There's just waves of enemies.
Yeah.
It's really, really disappointing.
It doesn't feel like the BioWare team, the main team, worked on it at all.
See, it would have been clever had they taken maybe a page out of Lair of the Shadow Broker where you have to bust through his shield and punch him in the face. I wanted to kick the Archon's ass, not fight his little bitch robot.
The extra bosses in Dragon Age, like when you like Inquisition, when you're fighting the dragons, a singular dragon fight is better than every boss fight combined in this game.
Yeah,
and those are optional bosses, not including the ones that are hell. The DLC bosses for any of the DLC packs for Dragon Age are better than anything in this game.
And that's disappointing too, because Mass Effect suffered from not having really strong boss encounters. I mean, even fighting the human Reaper, that was so stupid.
It appears
but at least
cool.
It was something.
Yeah.
In this, it was, here, do you want to fight an architect? Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know what? I ran into my first architect fight by accident. And it was the one on the ice planet. And I find out that's the hardest one in the game.
Yeah.
And I beat it. I'm like, oh, yep. Well, oh.
I really wanted to fight the Abyssal. And then they're like, no, it's just there to kill you. We didn't code that in.
Yeah, and there's that giant worm thing,
yeah, the Abyssal.
On Elendil. Yeah, you can't fight that. And that's DLC you know they're sitting on.
Yeah. Or how about the biggest waste? The ship on Elendil.
Yeah, that was awesome. I was expecting something awesome.
Nothing. You get no yeah. revelations from it. You walk through, and then that's it. It's still there.
Yeah, that was... It was something that I was very much anticipating. And yeah, just like you said, nothing.
There's just a lot of little plot points I think this game is going to leave unfulfilled for quite some time. And I think it's a real shame because Mass Effect, I felt, was picking up steam. And it sucks that they're going to put this property on hold for a while because Alex and I, we do this other side project called Terrible Warriors, which is a tabletop role-playing game. Dragon Age is licensed to Green Ronin Publishing, yet BioWare won't license the Mass Effect IP to any sort of tabletop company because they don't want quote-unquote people messing with it.
That's unfortunate.
And I don't think you could do much worse than Andromeda.
Well, no, not to mention, here's the biggest thing for me. The music is forgettable.
Yeah, there was no Jack Wall-esque, like, elusive man here, or there was no theme that I remember. There's nothing musically that I can remember.
No Cerberus network music. No, was it Leaving Home or Leaving Earth?
Yeah, like there was no moment of
there was nothing that hooked you
anything.
In. It felt again.
It was there.
Like somebody trying to mimic what they had done in the past, but not ever. It doesn't seem like anybody that worked on the previous series ever worked on anything in this game.
And I'm not saying that they suck as people, but
no, it's. It's a classic case of too many hands.
Like, yeah, it reminds me of Ubisoft, actually.
And sometimes they make a fantastic game, and sometimes they make a not-so-good one. Now, I don't know what's going to happen for the future of Mass Effect, and I think that terrifies me more than anything else. Because this is an IP. I have an N7 tattoo on my right arm. I love this franchise. I'm friends with Mark Meer. I'm pretty much the uber fanboy for this. And it sucks to see my baby falling down with scraped knees.
And you know what they need to get right next time, which we didn't even talk about, is facial animations.
Yeah, none of these characters felt alive. I mean,
they felt dead.
A game that just came out this past week is Injustice 2.
Oh, yeah.
The facial animations in that are... Harley Quinn looks alive.
Well, yeah, they're great.
The best I've ever seen was in The Order, but that is a 10-hour game basically designed as a tech demo for PS4.
That or
but
maybe...
If you want to go...
Uncharted.
And with those, it's because you've got something designed for one platform to take advantage of the maximum processing power they can. If you want to go even BioWare, though, Inquisition, that is 3 years old.
And I made that point, yeah.
It has better facial animations, significantly better. Better dialogue. Like, everything about that game is performed better than this. And I had figured that as soon as they finished that game, they moved on to Andromeda.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Extra Credits. It's a YouTube channel with some developers. They make a great video comparing Uncharted's animations to Mass Effect. And they bring up a point a lot of people just either don't care about or forget, is that the size and scope and scale of how many people they need to animate is far different. When you're talking about a 12-hour experience to 100 hours, obviously it's going to be different there. You've got way more people to animate. But when you talk about Inquisition and you talk about that being a game that came out in 2014 or 2013.
Yeah, and that's a 110-hour game.
And that is a big game, and that's better. It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. So I guess as my final question to everybody here, where do you want the franchise to go next? Alex, let's start with you.
Okay, I'll answer that. But also, just to speak on Inquisition was also on multi-generation platforms and looked better on the 360 and on the PS3.
Yeah.
Think about that.
That's depressing.
Anyway, okay. Where do I think it's going, you said? Yeah.
How long do you think this franchise is going to go to sleep for?
It's one of two things. Either they get working on it right now to try to recoup damage, but I don't think so. It's all going to depend on this next IP, this brand new IP that they're working on. If it tanks, they're going to pull all stops out and work on Mass Effect. If this other new IP works well, they might transition to using the new IP and Dragon Age. I would say we don't see another main game in the series probably for 3 years.
All right, my prediction is going to be 5 years. I'm going to say it's bad, real bad. I'm just going to bet on that. And there was another part to your question I completely forgot. You said how long? What are they going to do? It's hard to say internally because if everything's on fire internally, I think they go back to the drawing board. I'm not 100% sure on that. But what I would like them to do is there is so much rich prequel content and lore. I don't know if they'll do that, but hell, I'd like to play as Jack Harper. I think that would be awesome. The Elusive Man, I think, is one of the most interesting characters in Mass Effect that's not, you know, the player character, Shepard. So
for me, I'm going to go with Jackson. I think the series is going to go to sleep for at least 5 years, or maybe if there's an announcement regarding the Mass Effect movie, maybe we'll see some movement around there. As for what I want, like I said, there's so much prequel stuff. I want to see a game set during the Krogan rebellions, maybe what happened with the Rachni. There's so much stuff left unexplored. Hell, maybe even a game way back when the Reapers and the Protheans were at war. Races were wiped out.
It's really rich.
Yeah, like there's so many possibilities there. Or in my thing, I remember when Mass Effect was toying with a COD-based shooter at one point. They were talking about that. I think that'd be kind of fun for a side game. Not a main entry, mind you.
You know what? Almost a Telltale game would be good.
Tales of Mass Effect would be really awesome. Here's a Solarian STG
operative. But again,
have
the A-team do the writing.
No, you make my game. We did on Terrible Warriors. Paragon, or what did I call it? Renegade Rising. And it was about a Solarian STG operative that was ready to commit genocide for the Genophage.
Yeah, that works.
So, yeah, because he was nuts.
How they could fix this and how they could shoehorn in the main series, just have another arc and then have the survivors of Shepard's team show up.
If you told me the next Mass Effect game starred Garrus, I've got a pre-order done like yesterday.
Or here's something. If they don't want to put them in there, why couldn't they have if the Quarian arc came later, and it came either during or even potentially, the arc could come after the fall because they're not using gate technology or relay technology. Why couldn't the AI on that one, instead of Sam, why couldn't it be Edie?
That'd be kind of fun.
I like Edie.
Who's to say? All right, guys. Well, that's pretty much going to do it for us here on The Prototype. Jackson, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to have you back on the show. I'd love to talk Fallout with you and other great content. Actually, what do you have coming up for content on your channel over the next little bit?
Oh, man. It's honestly back to the drawing board for me. I've been doing a lot of streaming lately because I think that's a good thing, you know, to kind of transition into, especially with the YouTube stuff going on right now. So I'm doing that. And I'm really just kind of talking about whatever interests me in this space, you know, whatever I think my viewers would like to listen to. So
if people want to find you on YouTube, what do they search for?
Search for JV2017. I should pop up. If you put Mass Effect or Fallout or something like that, I should definitely pop up.
So, guys, be sure to check out his content, especially his Fallout 4 stuff. It made me so much more of a fan of that game. Plus, having him for Mass Effect really helped me as well. And Alex, we can find you on thisweekingeek.net. You're my new co-host for many different projects now.
Indeed.
You can find him on Twitter at Gravy Moose, just
correct.
The way it sounds.
Yes.
And if people want to find you on Twitter, Jackson, what do they have to look up?
I'm at JB2017.
Excellent. All right, guys. So for The Prototype and thisweekingeek.net, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. I'll catch you guys again next time, right here only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.